This episode of The Only Podcast About Movies was recorded a little differently. Live! That's right, we returned to PAX East this year of Some Lord 2024, and we got to discuss, have video game movies gotten good? We've talked about this a few times, but it was years ago. We have a bunch of great guests here. Sadly, Shahir could not make it, but don't worry. I mailed him a copy of Bellatro to keep him busy. Anyway, please enjoy this discussion and email us in at onlymoviepodcast@gmail.com with your favorite gaming movie. Let's go! Well, the numbers tell me that we are now going. So, hello, PAX. How are y'all? Happy Friday.
Friday.
All right.
Oh, well, thank you so much for coming and spending some of your Friday with us here. We are going to answer, hopefully tonight, the age-old question of have video game movies gotten good? We were planning this panel for a while, and then we realized that near none of us agree on how or if or why. So this should be hopefully pretty interesting. I want to first start by having our panelists introduce themselves. So if you would take it away.
Sure. I am Matt from Nando V Movies. I'm a YouTuber, and I have a podcast called Mostly Nitpicking. And I watch movies. Yeah.
I'm Kat, the social media director of Extra Credits, Extra History. Are we going to say our favorite movie too?
Oh, weren't yeah. I forgot that part.
That?
Okay. Nando, what's your favorite?
No,
what's
we
your
were
favorite?
All going to say it at once.
Yeah.
What happens if we don't say the same thing?
It'll be The Godfather.
Video game based. Oh, wait. No, wait. The never Godfather. Mind.
But Nando, what would be your favorite video game film of all time?
Oh, okay. Favorite or best?
Yes.
Okay. Either way.
However you want to answer.
Okay. I think there's a strong case to be made that Detective Pikachu is the best video game movie ever made.
All right. Yeah.
So I was on the fence for quite a while because there's been some really great video game movies that have come out lately, but I think I'm just going to go for my old favorite, which was The Wizard. Hopefully some of you have seen that. Hopefully.
What up, Fred Savage? Yeah.
It's an old one. It's a goodie.
Oh, okay. There we go. Hey, I found my notes just in time. Hey, everybody. I am Jeffrey Zatka. I'm the studio director of Extra Credits, and I've been a video game designer for, good Lord, over 25 years now. My first commercial game was EverQuest, and I've worked on a lot since, and I'm Extra Credits game designer in residence. And my favorite video game movie, is either Scott Pilgrim or The Last Starfighter, I think. Mm. Or maybe War Games. I don't know.
I'm sensing that. A kind of theme?
Yeah. What, that they're all old movies?
No, that they're all adjacent movies.
And you can't make a decision.
Which are the best kinds of
movies. Listen, we're going to let Red talk now.
Oh, hi. I'm Red Charizen. I'm the post-production supervisor for Extra Credits. I'm also a motion picture visual effects editor. We have recently released our movie, Killers of the Flower Moon. I would appreciate it. If you guys go campaign for Lily to win that Oscar, I think she's got a real good chance. No.
Yeah. Red has a real movie job. The rest of us comment on movie jobs. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Movie jobs. But
Red slums
so
it with us, which is very
as
nice.
As a media professional, obviously the one and only answer can be the 1993 Mario Brothers movie.
All right. And my name is Matthew Kroll. I am the showrunner and narrator of Extra Credits, but most importantly, I am Zoe's dad. And I would say that the best video game movie, hands down, is the original Mortal Kombat, which makes it really weird because the worst video game movie ever made is Mortal Kombat Annihilation. It was a roller coaster of a year and a half or whatever it took between those films. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what we're dealing with.
So was it this? They just didn't have the same techno soundtrack for it?
No, they had the exact same techno soundtrack for it. Yeah.
Reused it. Yeah, that's nice.
That was the one with all the tubes through the world, right?
They were in giant travel. Hamster balls, and they could use the Earth's core's hot air to go to all the different fighting levels from
of
the games.
My favorite part of those games is like, how did they get there, though?
I really want to know the travel logistics of all the Mortal Kombat fighters to get to and from where they're killing each other.
just want to lay out some ground rules real quick for our panel's
conversation.
Okay. So first, we are going to limit our discussion, because if we don't, it'll be longer than an hour.
I think you just have to.
Because we already did that. Yeah.
We're going to limit it to sort of like films produced in the standard Hollywood model. So we're not going to be doing any either straight to TV stuff or a lot of the anime stuff we won't be touching, because quite honestly, I've seen some of it and the panel has seen, I think actually between all of us, we've probably seen every one of the sort of Hollywood studio, I think it's like 46 or 47 different video game adaptation films. Not, we all haven't seen them together, but or individually, but together we probably.
Well, you didn't know this, but I was there every time.
I felt like you were there in my heart when I was watching.
So that's ground rule number one. Ground rule number two is there's no going in reverse. Mm-hmm. So if a movie came out and then a game came out, we're not going to be talking about it sort of in that context. With the exception of Street Fighter.
Yeah.
Because Street Fighter had Street Fighter the movie, the game, even though the game came out before the movie that the movie, the game was based on. Does that make sense?
Wait, was it a novelization?
You know, I wish.
Oh my gosh.
You mean the book? Street Fighter, the book? Street Fighter, the game? Movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great book.
Novelizations kill me. Hey, look, it was made from a book. We made a movie. The movie was so different, we made a new book about the movie, about the, yeah.
Everybody loves Street Fighter, though. We want more Street Fighter, so I'm okay with it.
I just, Jean-Claude Van, sorry, now I'm just going off to a tangent. Jean-Claude Van Damme's speech.
Tangent number one of the evening.
In the Street Fighter film, when he challenges M. Bison, is probably, I think, Jean-Claude Van Damme's greatest cinematic performance. I'm talking, like, I said something like he's going to kick Bison's ass so hard that his grandchildren are going to feel it or something. I don't remember exactly what it was.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Wiped from my memory.
And now, who wants to go home and who wants to go with me? It's like this weird, like, I don't know. His voice cracked a little less than mine.
And then he got in a boat, right?
He did get in a boat. He got in the boat from that from that Hulk Hogan show where he was a detective in a high-tech boat. Like a it was the same boat.
Oh.
Yeah. Number two. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm sorry. So those are our two main rules going forward. So when we were deciding to talk about video game films, we've sat down together multiple times at this point to try to get a general consensus, which does not exist, which actually got me to wanting to ask all of you. So I want, on the count of three, as loud as you are comfortable saying it, to all say your favorite video game movie at the exact same time.
We should record this, Kat.
You're going to record? Okay. Okay.
For the law. We'll show everybody.
And yeah, and this is on the record.
Well, no. Yeah.
3, 2, 1.
The Godfather.
I think I heard The Godfather.
I think we solved it. Yeah. This has been a great panel. Thank you so much. No. I think based on that, it's obviously clear that in the colloquialism we are using of getting good, thank you, Dark Souls, is not something that is easily defined, because good can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And even though we will be talking about a lot of different movies and probably poo-pooing on a few, I want to make it very clear that we don't really want to yuck the yums of people. Any film that makes it across the finish line is a miracle.
Yeah, we can't punch down. Because we're talking about an industry that has hundreds of people working on something, and nobody wakes up in the morning and saying, I want to make a bad movie. Everybody who works on a film wants to make a great movie. Just sometimes those movies aren't very good.
Fred, couldn't we underwrite it? And if we purposefully made a bad movie?
You can't take Uwe Boll's whole thing.
Yeah.
That's been done.
Yeah.
So Blood Rain is the greatest video game movie.
I forgot he did that
ding,
one.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. No, so I kind of, let's go down the list. Actually, let's start with Red. What do you think makes a video game movie good? Like, what are your criteria?
Okay. You sure want to start with me?
I don't want to start.
Okay.
Let's do it.
We're going to go deep. What makes a video game movie good? I think first we have to understand what a video game movie is. It's a movie. with a video game.
No. I hate you.
What makes a video... What was the question?
What makes a video game movie good?
Oh, yeah. What makes a video game good?
Were we going to say this at the end?
Yeah, I thought this was going to be the conclusion.
I changed the format. Pray I don't change it any further.
Okay. Mm. So, ultimately speaking, I believe that a good video game movie is a synthesis between the experience of the video game and the experience of a movie. When you sit in a movie, there is a certain... narrative journey that you go on. When you play a video game, there's another kind of journey that you go on. A successful video game movie is able to translate from one medium the feeling, the authenticity, not necessarily the factual stipulations of the movie, and it transcends the original feelings that you had in the video game and captures that in the film. Doesn't have to be a direct translation, nor does it have to be so abstract from it that you can't recognize it. But more importantly, you are finding elements of the film that remind you of the core experience that you had while playing the game. Or conversely, if you have not played the game, you want to go out and immediately find somebody playing the game on Twitch and watch them for the next 7 hours. I think that's what makes a successful video game film.
Okay. Jeff?
I have a very different answer than that.
Of course he does.
Let's see. I think, honestly, a good video game movie is one that both executes well, but hold on, what did... respects the property and their audience. Because for a long time, I think a lot of movies were made that didn't respect the property they were working on, and they didn't respect the audience that enjoyed that property. That people would come in and take it and they'd be like, oh, okay, I see that, but we're going to go make this whole new thing that I want to make that doesn't deal with the brand or the license we got and that doesn't respect the people who like that. And so I think it took a while for us to kind of have our Pirates of the Caribbean moment where they took this thing that nobody expected to work and it suddenly really got huge. And I think one of the things we're not talking about, which is the games that come out to support a movie. Like, having been in the video game industry for a long time, the reason those games always sucked was movies take this much time to make, and video games take this much time to make. And the movie studios would come and say, hey, cool, we want a game to come out with launch. Here's the release date that has to happen. And the studio would say, oh, good, you should have come to us a year and a half ago. And they'd say, well, do you want the money to make this or not? And the studio would say, yes, we do. And you'd get the crappy game movies. So for a while, that's, I think, what most of us remember when we think of awful video game movies, is because there were so many games about movies as opposed to movies about games that were bad. But anyway, for me, it's something that respects the property and the people who enjoy it.
Well, respectfully, I disagree with your disagreement. We're in agreement.
That's catastrophic. So yeah.
I think what makes a video game movie good is the fact that it becomes renowned in a way that isn't just with gamers. It's something that my mom is going to watch. My grandma is going to watch. We're going to enjoy it together. We're going to talk about it. It becomes more mainstream. And I feel like a video game movie shouldn't be like compartmentalized into just this thing that only people who play video games can watch and understand and enjoy. I want to see video game movies get to that plane of existence where everybody can enjoy them and talk about them. And that to me just makes a fantastic movie if you can talk about it with your friends and family and everybody's going to understand you.
Yeah, I think I more or less agree with that. Although I would say the thing that I haven't heard too much of so far on the panel, I feel like the thing that makes a great video game movie is using the medium of the movie and using just whatever, you know, medium you're presenting it in and doing something you couldn't do in the game, like taking that world a step further. And sometimes it can be, you know, taking the Pokemon and putting them into the real world. And not that doesn't automatically make the video game movie great, although it's a really good start. But like that idea of taking something and really stretching, keeping obviously the spirit of it correct and like the core of it correct, but making it something that couldn't exist as a video game. So for instance, if we want to talk about something that kind of doesn't do this, I would say like maybe the Super Mario game movie game is like kind of the one from recently, not the
recent one. Not of course,
one.
Bob Hoppe.
Yeah, that one's interesting. That one has some interesting stuff. The director's fought and stuff or whatever. I don't know. It was weird. But yeah, I think giving it some a chance to have another dimension is important.
Just side note, does everyone know the story of what happened with that original Mario Brothers movie? About, yeah, right? So I'm going to paraphrase here real quick, but the long story short is there is a alternate scene and an alternate ending that the whole movie was based around. There was this shot where people, I forget if they were the real developers or not, but Nintendo was going to show up at Mario and Luigi's apartment in that movie at the end and be like, we're Nintendo, your story is fantastical, we want to buy the rights. And that was going to be sort of the end of the movie. Now think about that for a second, because it sounds silly. And I don't even know if it would have worked back then. I feel like in a 2024 climate, like we'd be like, yep.
What if they were played by Samuel Jackson?
Right. What was that, Red?
What if they were played by Samuel Jackson?
Then doubly so it works. But then they chose to cut that out, leaving the entirety of that movie to be taken at face value. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I also understand the negative connotation with what that movie was and how it represented, and that it kicked off this whole thing outside of The Wizard and a couple games that are games adjacent, but an adaptation of a game into a movie. So, sorry, I would say I kind of more lean for what I think makes a good video game movie into Red's definition a little bit, which I dumb it down a little bit because I don't have the words for it, but it's just sort of a vibe. I want the adaptation to deliver me what I loved about the game. Something recently that weirdly did this, even though it is, and we're going to talk a little bit about the different categories we've tried to put these in across time periods, but in one that we've sort of, I've coined like games as a cultural artifact films. Is the recent Apple movie Tetris. Has anyone seen that in the, right?
Okay. If you haven't seen it, you need to.
It's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And it's not obviously, it's funny, we're at PAX and I can tell this. I don't know if you've seen the Penny Arcade panel forever ago about like Tetris the movie. It was like a fake poster with the thing, with the blocks coming down from the sky and people. That was such a funny thing. But this is basically the story of how Tetris was swindled, smuggled, etc., out of Russia and was signed to Nintendo to be released on the Game Boy. Like, it's the corporate story of it. But what that movie does while telling you this story is it has a pace and a cadence that I might be doing this a little hyperbole, but like, it gave me the same tension build as a game of Tetris. They're building things, they're trying to make sure that like their plan goes ahead. Of course, it doesn't go to plan, the block falls in the wrong place. This thing, it goes just crazy off the rails. It ends in a sort of chase scene that, I'm not gonna spoil it, but like the world starts coming apart and the graphics of Tetris start sort of coming into the movie, even though it has nothing to do with it, but it feels like, and like at the end of a Tetris match, that's how I feel. So I really appreciated that they were able to put that sort of vibe into something that has nothing to do with the story of inside of Tetris. It's the story of how Tetris came to be on all of our Game Boys. So like, that's the kind of thing that really drives me into thinking something is good or effective or not. Because we have plenty of examples, I think, where that does not happen.
Well, and you're not even doing that enough justice, because it was like a gut-wrenching, like it really did feel like Tetris, like every brick coming down, like every new scene was like, oh my God, what is going to happen now? And as I was watching the movie, I thought, oh, this is a fantastic story as I'm going through it. But as soon as you mentioned that, I was like, no, yeah, that's absolutely the feeling that you get when you're playing Tetris. And I loved so much that they took this idea and that made it into that. Because that was something that, I mean, you don't really see that much from video game movies. And I want to see more of that, everyone. Like, if you have not seen that movie, go see it.
Yeah. And, oh, sorry, you...
No, I'm sorry. I don't want to blow up your panel. I really don't.
Do it.
Do it.
But do it. It sounds to me like none of us are actually disagreeing here. It actually sounds like we're all saying variants of the same thing.
Okay, then
do you guys sense that? Can I get a show of hands? Yeah. Are we disagreeing?
Here, I'll disagree then, Matt. I think.
Okay. Are we agreeing?
I was. Okay. I don't think
we got a
movie
problem.
About video games has to evoke a video game vibe.
How dare you?
I think that
I can't
is.
I'm sitting next to this guy.
Leave. I think that if you want to make a good movie about a video game, you respect the property, but I don't need to watch a Need for Speed one and feel like I am heading towards a crash the entire time.
You don't need speed?
I know.
It's in the title, Jeff.
I'm sure at some point they're going to make a Grand Theft Auto movie, Like, there's plenty
that we're just waiting for six. Yeah.
Like, there's a certain vibe I want out of that, but I want to see more of the story than necessarily, you know, feel like I need to go carjack 50 things along the way.
He's making sense. I hate it when he does that.
But I think there's a lot of video games, and I think there's a lot of video game adjacent movies where, like, when I watched War Games, there is no game that it is referencing, but it is the culture of games that's coming out. So did the early Tron. When you watched Free Guy, I mean, there's a whole bunch of ones that I don't have to evoke the vibe of a particular game, but I like that games are in the movie or the game culture is in the movie.
Well, that was a whole different thing for me, too. Mm-hmm. Game culture in something versus a video game movie, because I don't think they're the same thing. Like, I don't think that Tron or, you know, like your War Games and stuff, because it's not an actual video game. So whenever you said that, I was like, how dare you?
Okay, so I'm going to have to bring up my point, which is the emergence of the way we discuss the films is possibly what makes a video game movie. The emergence of a general collection in our consciousness of a genre of video game movies, whether it's about involving or adjacent to a property that is a video game that is real, imaginary, or soon to be released, all kind of gets talked to and treated by critical reviews about, there's this place, it's called, the internet. And it tends to get, they lump together. I don't think that's a coincidence. In the way that we'd say Westerns are a genre, that's not true. Westerns are actually anywhere between musicals, comedies, and, I don't know. I'm sure other movies exist. I can't think of it. Taylor Swift films. Yeah.
Yeah. So, the Eras Tour.
Yes. In the same way we have, you know, kind of like branded all of those as Westerns because it involves, you know, a desert or a cowboy or robbing a train. Video game movies emerge now in our popular conscious, not just a small group of people, even though you are the best of us, as a genre that we speak about. So maybe the elevation of the emerging genre itself is what is beginning to make video games good. Movies.
We haven't heard from Nando in a bit.
I think the Pokemon have to look different than they did in the game. Like, the textures is really important. I do think, I think what you're saying about, like, the idea that the video, I don't consider War Games a video game movie. I also don't consider Tetris a video game movie. I think the video game movie needs to take place in the world of the video game. If it takes place in our world, this is why Scott Pilgrim isn't a video game movie either. It's a movie about video games. The same way that, like, I don't know. American Splendor isn't a comic book movie. Spider-Man's a comic book movie. Everyone remembers American Splendor?
Yeah, no, I got
Pokemon
there.
Pokemon or something.
Yeah, no, I got it.
It's a, but yeah, I think that's the thing that maybe is creating a disconnect here is like, I just cannot compare the video game moviness of a movie like, you know, Uncharted to a video movie like Tetris because they're just not trying to achieve the same thing.
Well, they are still adapting the okay. I'm going to use very heavy air quotes. They're adapting an IP, meaning that Uncharted is taking the Uncharted video game and just stripping of its interactivity and then putting that on the screen.
Yes.
And then not really adding much. And then Tetris, because there is no, I mean, there's no deep-seated lore that I am aware of, please correct me when I'm wrong, about the story of what's going on inside of your Tetris game. So they took
that. The struggle of the Tetroids?
Yeah. They took that. They
about
took
feeling
that.
Boxed in.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They took that IP and then added to it. They've modified it. They've adapted the Tetris IP into a movie called
but
Tetris.
I think Nando's
I would say
right.
That's a video game.
Well, no. Hold on. Let's ask the audience.
Yeah.
Ooh. Who thinks Free Guy is a video game movie?
Ryan Reynolds movie.
I think Free Guy.
Is Free Guy a video game movie?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So clearly, Free Guy is not a video game movie.
Well,
okay.
Yeah. Some
that
people
was
it
a good
is.
Number of people.
Is Gran Turismo a video game movie?
Is Gran Turismo a video game car shopping simulator?
Yeah,
all right,
it is.
All
it
right.
is.
Okay, how about is Tron a video game movie? They go into a computer simulation.
Okay.
Yeah, but so many, there's a bunch of stuff that goes into, like.
Interesting.
Oh, I'm having a big brain moment.
Okay, let's hear your big brain moment.
What if we are the simulation?
Okay, all right.
Would you like the red pill or the blue pill?
Well, okay. Maybe we can shed some light on this if we sort of break down a little bit more into like the categories or styles.
Oh, wait, Matt, did you say categories?
Did I say what?
I like categories. Let's do categories.
Yeah. So we were trying to think of like how to parse these things. We've sort of name dropped a few of them. I said video game is cultural artifact. We've talked about referential or stylistic video game movies. But I think when, you know, Mario, Double Dragon, I'm trying to think of like the order of operations that Street Fighter was third. Mortal Kombat was fourth. Mortal Kombat Annihilation was fifth. Wing Commander into Tomb Raider. Let's just go sort of there. And that spans roughly, I don't know, that's from 93 to 99. Okay. That was sort of the start, and what the style we were starting to sort of see is sort of the driver of making that thing is name brand recognition. So maybe you never played Street Fighter, or maybe you never got punched in the gut in Double Dragon, but like you might have heard about those properties somewhere else, or you've heard the words strung together, and then therefore that's an easy way to get butts in seats.
Those nice River City Boys, yes.
Yeah. I like the whole I understood that reference of it all. And then when you finally get to something like Street Fighter or even Tomb Raider, you start really infusing at the time superstars, like superstar actors. Jean-Claude Van Damme at the time was a big name. Angelina Jolie was a big name.
It's still a big name. Yeah. It's three names.
Yeah. Is Bond really a name?
Huge.
No, Jean-Claude.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that's four.
But sort of, they're taking the property and adding, so it's like name brand recognition on top of name brand recognition. And that has been a lot of what we've gotten, I feel like, for ever since this started, but there's sort of different branching paths. Would people sort of agree, disagree?
Generally speaking, I think you can see an evolution.
I think the brand name recognition of, having a star come out up front and everything definitely brought people in to see those things. And that was what was really important and kind of started off this slow lift.
But at the same time,
video game movies,
they still felt kind of like bolted on stories.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like the script was written and they were like, we need a property. What do we got? I don't know. My kid was playing something called Double the Donkeys the other day. And see what we can do about that. It's fun. Right.
Well, and Mortal Kombat, the best video game movie, did follow the plot. It was a small plot, but the plot of the video game movie. Every 10 years or whatever, there's a tournament and they have to go to Shang Tsung's island and they have to fight against Outworld, and they're on the 9th out of 10th tournament losing and everything's on the line. And those were $500 sunglasses, asshole. Like it gave the whole sort of like, it encompassed what that game was, so that followed the thing accurately, where Street Fighter did not. Yeah.
Tomb Raider did a pretty good job.
Tomb Raider didn't follow the plot of the game, but it felt like a Tomb Raider story, right?
I'm beginning to think that Super Mario Brothers 1993 is the Jaws of blockbusters, of video game movies, as Jaws is to blockbusters.
Sure.
Right? So there's been an evolution of the blockbuster, right? We went from Jaws, Shark Eats Boat, which is like, ooh, but come on, Spielberg.
I've heard of him.
Big Shark.
Let me rap for him. sorry, Marty. So now our blockbusters. What was that huge blockbuster that did really, really, really super well?
Barbenheimer.
Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, Super Mario Brothers. Yeah.
All the above, right?
Yes.
All the above. But they're very different from that Jaws experience, that we all consider them like those like summer blockbusters, right? So maybe video games are evolving in the same way. Video game movies are evolving in the same way.
Yeah.
Okay, the end. Thank you very much.
No, hold on. But I also think part of the problem, or part of what makes this complicated, is that Super Mario Brothers is a good example. Compared to Tetris. Tetris doesn't really work this way. Super Mario Brothers does technically have a character and a story and a plot and like locations and all the things you need to write a script. But Uncharted is a movie split into video game. Like, I feel like one of the things that I think has made this a lot easier is a lot of the video game movies are adapting games that also are already kind of movies. Detective Pikachu, Uncharted, what was the other one that was? Five Nights at Freddy's. Yeah, exactly. Like, I think there's something to these modern video games that I think are just different than what an older video game movie
World of
had
Warcraft.
To invent. Right, because you had to
I'm
figure
sorry,
out.
Did you say something, Jeff? Did you sneeze? Are you okay?
World of Warcraft.
Gesundheit.
Oh, yeah. But you had to, like, invent. Why does Super Mario, like, why does he jump? Oh, he's got these shoes. Like, why does he... Oh, God, I don't know. What's his... Why is he named Mario? Why is the plumbing company named Mario?
Mario.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But when you get, like, Uncharted, all that stuff's already there because they pretty much wrote a movie.
So it was the new Tomb Raider. So, I mean, a whole bunch of them. Games have... One of the things about game development, and I can speak having been a game developer for a long time, is we play to our medium and we play to our strengths. For a long time, you know, when we put out the original Mario Brothers or things like that, we didn't have the memory or the graphics to put in to make more story with a lot of these. The original stand-up arcade games, you were lucky to get a couple of words on the screen and a couple of 8-bit sounds going on. And as games have gotten more sophisticated and we've gotten more storage and we've gotten better capacity and better tools to build them, we've been able to put out things with more story and more heart and more length, ones where you can control the output on more than a very linear direction into making branching paths up till, say, you know, last year's Baldur's Gate with thousands of different permutations, actually combinatorically, hundreds of millions of permutations of how your game could turn out. So it has been an evolution of the game medium in addition to this, which has allowed us to make more cinematic style presentations, which are then more naturally adaptable into movies.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, adapting something with a strong or a weak narrative, in my opinion, isn't the end all be all of whether the adaptation itself is strong or weak.
Oh, no, I was just going to Nando's point that he said more modern games have better stories.
Right.
It's because we have the tools to do so.
But I don't, so like, let's, another, I think, successful video game movie I think we all agree on would be Sonic the Hedgehog.
Sure, yeah.
Right? Now, Sonic has lore.
Mm-hmm. How old is he?
Hedgehog the best. Yeah.
But like, unless you are deep into that lore, there we go. All right, I see you. The general population knows that he was the other mascot that goes fast. He's the antithesis of Mario. You know, Sega does what Nintendo don't, yada, yada, yada. Like, the general population that I think the millions of people that watched and enjoyed the Sonic the Hedgehog movie, they don't know any of that stuff.
Yeah.
So they took that. And again, this is dipping a little bit into the wonderful episode of Extra Credits that you actually wrote a couple years ago. This is sort of a tangent of where these IP things sort of went. Mm-hmm. And that is, I believe, Jeff, you coined this term. I really liked it. the new protagonist wave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that sort of started back with the first Mila Jovovich Resident Evil movie. I don't know if people remember that back in the day, but right. And also, great movie, invokes the feeling of exploration, and it's worried. It's you're sneaking through spaces for 2/3 of that thing before it becomes an action thing, and then there's lasers in a hallway. But like, the sort of, do you want to speak to that a little bit? The new protagonist stuff.
Well, I what was I going to say? I do think the new protagonist thing is because thinking about like Sonic is actually a really, I think, interesting way to think about it, because we've had two Sonic movies and one of them's good and one of them's okay. And like Sonic 2, I think, does utilize Sonic as the protagonist, where it feels like Sonic 1, the protagonist is whatever the guy, you know, Cyclops or whatever his name is from Jury Duty. And like, I think that...
Let's go with Cyclops.
Yeah. And I think because Sonic has so much personality built into... And the thing with Sonic and Mario is this too, is like in 1993, when they made the Super Mario Brothers movie, there wasn't all that lore. But now if you make a Super Mario Brothers movie, you've got so much more stuff to build on. And Sonic's the same way. And that's why I think this new one that's going to come out, knock on wood, where they do that thing that we all know they're going to do because they cast that one actor it's going to be pretty exciting. But like that is so based off of a cinematic video game that it almost feels like that franchise knew after Sonic 1 they had to, you know, kind of go in the other direction. Otherwise, it would kind of pull this thing into the ground. That's why every time you have to go to the whatever Harrah's Resort or whatever in Sonic 2, the you don't remember that?
Which thing?
They go to a resort in the second Sonic movie. It's like 90% of the
Sonic 2 Weekend at Bernie's?
Yeah, well, yeah, they go to somebody's wedding and they turn out to be a cop. It's really weird.
That's Sonic 1, isn't it?
No, it's the second one.
Oh, they do get married in the second one. That's right. Love is great.
The main character is also a cop. There's a lot of cops in the Sonic movie.
I think, Matt, we need to explain what we mean, though, by this concept.
Yes. Oh, yeah, sorry. Sure. Sorry. No, but that was a good tangent. So James Marsden is the name of the wonderful actor who played Cyclops and was in the Sonic movie, by the way. I like him a lot. But the new protagonist wave is basically the idea that, okay, so as to Jeff's point even earlier, they were taking IP and not like really respecting either the fans of it or et cetera, and just making sure the name was out there. They could tack a big star onto it and then go. Fans obviously didn't vibe with that all the time. So then it got to this weird point, especially as the internet got bigger, more prolific and louder. It was less okay, like from a even just money-making standpoint to do that because the fans would get really mad at different decisions and then the movie wouldn't do as well. Mm-hmm. So I think they rode this weird little line of, well, we have to respect the canon and respect the fans, but these filmmakers kind of want to tell a story that they kind of designed. So what do? Well, we introduce this gentleman into Sonic. We introduce The Rock into Rampage. We introduce Cole into the new Mortal Kombat. These are all characters in the games we don't care about. They're meant to onboard, as you said.
Characters created out of whole cloth. So characters that were never in any of the video games created specifically for the movie so that fans won't say, you messed up Johnny Cage, you messed up Ryu. But going along with that, you have no investment coming in. This isn't going to watch, you know, Street Fighter and see Ken and Ryu in it. It's, you know, Bob. And you don't care about Bob. You care about Ken and Ryu or, you know, any of these movies with the characters you came to see. And it was, I mean, it's a fascinating thing to try and dodge the Reddit hate threads, but it's also kind of a thing where suddenly you're not as interested in the movie that you're going to see because it doesn't have the heart of the movie. They've, you know, offloaded it to a character who won't interfere with the lore. And I can understand that from a safety perspective, but it's also just, it's not as much fun.
Yeah, and that is the problem with it. Mortal Kombat's a good example where, like, you have a guy in the first scene of the movie who is an immortal, not immortal, well, I don't know what the heck the angle mark, but like some sort of skeleton man from hell who has his whole family murdered, and then the ice guy comes in, and then they murder each other. And then we cut to the prize fighter who's sad because he doesn't have enough money for his daughter, sister, whatever that other character's doing. Like,
and his daughter, sister.
You can't throw just some guy into a movie with Sub-Zero and expect me to care about some guy. Like, and it's, you can't fight with the fact that there is all of this lore. Like, you do the same thing with Sonic the Hedgehog. Like, this kid, you know, run really fast and he chili dogs. He plays basketball or baseball by himself. And then there's this cop who's nice and maybe wants to have a baby and buy a house and go to Olive Garden. And it's just like, you can't. Yeah. Why would I care about what he's doing?
I hear what you're saying and I respect that. But what if we replace some guy or Bob or whatever with Ryan Reynolds?
Yeah.
Oh, well,
he's a character. Yeah. Exactly.
I'm on it.
Also, can I just say some guy sounds like a Mortal Kombat character name?
Oh, yeah.
Some guy. I wins. And it's like, yeah, no, that fits.
That's fair. That's fair.
Thank you, Ermac.
I think part of this, though, is to say that also that main grouping never went away. We still got the Uncharted movie recently, which was, let's, you know, follow the line of the main protagonist.
Mm-hmm. Let's follow Spider-Man in an Indiana Jones kind of movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there was this whole wave that came in for a certain point where it felt like almost every movie about or video game movie was like, let's play it safe and not cast the main people from the game. Mm-hmm. And it was almost startling to see how many groups all did this all within a couple year span. Mm-hmm. And that's why we kind of dubbed it the wave, because it actually felt like a wave kind of movement going on.
And I think I might have jumped the gun a little bit because I'm looking at the list.
Really?
And
we started with the conclusion.
The conclusion then walked our way through.
I think I jumped the gun again. Because I'm looking at the list sort of between the main IP recognition and the new protagonist wave. And there is something in the middle. I don't even know what to call it, but I'm going to describe it because I didn't notice this distinction until now.
All right, let's call it Dave.
Bob.
Some guy. No, so around the time Oh, God. Is it when UE Bowl started?
Yeah, it's the collapse.
Okay, it's the collapse.
Yeah. This is where the whole
so
thing
So, like, oh, around wow, like 2003, that. With the release of House of the Dead, mm-hmm. has anyone seen the UE Bowl film, House of the Dead? Mm-hmm. It was based off Typing of the Dead for the Sega Dreamcast. Mm-hmm. No. But then after that, it was just almost like still doing like, well, now they're not even going to try to infuse like bigger elements of Hollywood into it. Let's just churn this ish out. Mm-hmm. Like they went straight into Doom. Again, another yeah. Dwayne The Rock Johnson vehicle. But what did they do in Doom? Does everyone remember the movie Doom?
Yeah.
What's a quintessential plot point of Doom? One word.
Hell.
What didn't the movie have?
Hell. Yeah.
Thank you. Went into Doom, Blood Rain, Silent Hill, which I kind of have a soft spot for. Right? Then it goes into the other Resident Evils, and then Postal, Hitman, In the Name of the King, a dungeon siege tale. Far Cry, Max Payne, Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li, the Tekken movie, which did not do well.
Actually, none of those did well, did they?
No, yeah. but then this is the weird part. And then we get on the other Resident Evils, we get a second Silent Hill, Need for Speed, Hitman Age of 47, and then, of course, the Warcraft movie. But there's one I left out, which I actually, this is one I did not see.
Mm.
The Jake Gyllenhaal vehicle, The Prince of Persia, yeah. The Sands of Time.
Yeah. What year did that come out?
That was in the year of some lord, give me a moment, 2010.
Okay.
It also made $336 million.
Yeah.
But that
in 2010.
That though, of all of the movies you just listed, was the only one I ever saw a commercial for. That was also the only one that had the we have a name, we have a star. They did it the old way, and we're going to promote the hell out of it.
Like, yeah, it kind of jumped back.
Yeah.
There was that had TV spots everywhere.
Well, because the budget of that movie was between $150 and $200 million, so the marketing budget had to be somewhere around there, a little bit below, most likely. So there's a reason that we all kind of remember it, even if we didn't see it. Mm-hmm. Like, we saw pieces of it enough across whatever screens we were watching at the time. Mm-hmm. And then to sort of just bring us home, I do think, this hurts me to say,
oh, no.
but the movie that we said wasn't real, but it is, the Warcraft movie.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. It doesn't exist.
I want to love the Warcraft movie. I think the people that made the Warcraft movie love Warcraft and World of Warcraft. For me, there is something deeply missing. And I tried to sort of square it. Like, I own this movie on physical media. I want, like, an actual copy of it. I want to have it. I think there's things worthy to mine from it. The Warcraft movie showed me awesome stuff, locations that I'd spent hours in, a photorealistic enough griffin and a man riding on it. Like, I really did dig all of those things, but nothing in it felt at all to me like the experience of playing World of Warcraft, which I know is not everyone's thing, but that was important to me. And what World of Warcraft is to me is camaraderie and friendship and sort of going on an adventure with people that you would, like, at least care about. And I felt like no character in that entire movie cared about any other character in that entire movie.
And nobody screamed Leroy Jenkins.
Well, yeah, 100%.
The cardinal sin of cinema.
That would have made the movie right there.
But, like, and it's funny because I think that was sort of like the upswing, like, yeah. really throwing yeah. money at yeah. the problem. And I'm going to say here, if we're dropping numbers, that made $439 million. So, like, it's not like that was a failure globally at all.
No. Well, yeah, it was marketed well. People went to watch it and everything. Yep. But me also being someone who has played a ton of Warcraft, just a ton, it was, like, fantastical to go and see, but there was, like, a feeling of just loss, like, in my heart after seeing it. It was like, oh, I feel like that should have been better. Like, you were right. There is something missing from that. There's heart missing from that movie because you have all this fantastic art and you have the lore built in. You get to see the places there and everything. And it seems like it would be really exciting. And
you know what it set up?
It was
though?
Sad.
It set up a really good D&D movie.
Yeah.
Because exactly. I think they looked at that and they said they are missing the quintessential part of D&D, which is feeling like this could be a... The party bantering and the way yes. the players do around the table. I mean, the movie was fun, and the locations were great, and it was in Waterdeep, and I mean, they had all of their stuff, but it was the feel of the characters bantering evoked the feel of a good D&D game.
Felt like a D&D game, yeah.
And I feel like that's fair to bring in, even though it's not a video game, because it is at least a game, and there's been a lot of video games made from it.
If we're going off book, Clue is an excellent film because it feels like Clue.
Yes.
There's different endings to Clue.
Yes. You know, Clue is the most Clue movie, like, ever. It absolutely is, yes.
But that, I think, transitions us really nicely into there are movies that are not just about games, but are still video game movies, in my opinion.
He's going to fight hard for this one.
Say so.
And Matt, you have a one here listed as, you know, games that treat, or movies that treat an actual game as a cultural artifact, because you were describing Tetris.
Yeah, my list for that is basically something, even though it is hot garbage, Pixels.
Oh, Pixels was awful.
Something that was surprisingly delightful, 8-Bit Christmas. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm old enough to really hit that. That hit me in the feels. Tetris, Gran Turismo, The Wizard, and some part of Ready Player One, specifically the referential part, not the Oasis part. Mm-hmm. And then Jeff, your list that you were sort of talking about culture and style.
Yeah. Which is movies that part of the essential part of the game is talking about a video game. Mm-hmm. So this would be War Games. This would be Scott Pilgrim. This would be Free Guy. This would be Jumanji. This would be Tron. This would be The Last Starfighter. This would be Ready Player One, kind of the Oasis part.
Can I add one in there? Live, Die, Repeat, or Edge of Tomorrow.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
What about Wreck-It Ralph? Oh, Wreck-It Ralph. Yeah, Wreck-It Ralph.
Really interesting.
It's weird. Wreck-It Ralph does both. Yeah. Wreck-It Ralph treats games as a cultural artifact. And sort of culture and style,
I'm
sort
not
of.
Saying you stole my thunder.
Oh no!
Got him.
Were you going to say that one? Yeah. But
I brought up Wreck-It Ralph in the meeting where we decided to pause this fight because I was winning.
But for me, like the movies I care about the most, the video game movies are those ones. You know, the video game style ones. Like War Games and Tron were influential to me as a young person, like growing up, because they talked about the things I loved in a serious manner, or a world that treated them seriously. Or go ahead.
I wanted you to finish the thought.
Hmm. And like Last Starfighter, for when it came out, it's basically aliens are looking for starfighter pilots, and the way they test is they put a video game down and see who's really good at it. It was everything Pixels should have been, but wasn't, and that they pulled off really well. And I mean, for a lot of people of my age, those movies all have a real fondness and nostalgia because we also saw all these awful movies or awful kind of game movies that came out in conjunction with it. So the ones that treated it seriously, like War Games, I watched it again recently, holds up. It is still a badass movie. And so there's a lot of those as well that aren't trying to be the Street Fighters and the Mortal Kombats, but they're saying games are interesting and it's good to make movies about them.
I like what you say. I'm going to yes and on this.
Oh, I was expecting a but. Okay.
No. Yes and but. Yes, but and. I've said this before, and I'm still kicking around the idea, and you guys can help me out here. I said the whole genre thing. It was a bit of a false dodge, though I do believe it. I also believe that movies that involve video games, no matter how their relationship, trust, and to use Jeff's words, respects the audience. And I'm talking here about some sort of meta-textual knowledge, right? That is the knowledge that we bring to the experience from outside the theater, right? No matter, you know, how you live your life, the games that you play, the newspapers that you don't subscribe to, but you still read anyhow because you just use the reader button on Safari and you can load the New York Times.
Okay, that got a little
a little oddly specific.
Yes.
I don't know why. That was weird. So what I'm suggesting is that maybe the strength of video game films, the emergent genre, is that the good ones trust the audience enough to fill in some of the metatextual blanks that they don't need to be explicit about and can rather get to the feels about it. We don't need a bolt-on or paste-up main character to guide us in, because now we're all aware enough that we're going into, it's not oil painting, it's not
black and white photography. It's trichrome photography. It's a new way of looking at things for the first time. And so you take a little bit of the language from column A and a little bit of the language from column B, and you allow that experience to mix around, a thesis and an antithesis synthesize into a new experience, which elevates your understanding of the medium, and you can communicate more thoroughly a thought, a story, a narrative, a core experience. Maybe that's what makes a good video game movie. Or maybe my mouth is just really dry.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, okay.
I think we need Kat or Matt to...
Yeah, it's tough, because like on one hand, respecting the audience is important, because otherwise they'll yell at you and it'll be really hard. Like, you can't give Sonic teeth. But I think that is, like, but that's respecting the, and I think that's the one of the weirdest things that's ever happened, because it's going to always go back as like that thing where the internet yelled at them and they were totally right, and it made this franchise incredibly successful. But yeah. I think part of the like thought process is like you don't have to necessarily respect the audience as much as you just have to understand what it is that they like about the thing. But besides that, I think after you get that, you go in some other direction or take the ball and, like, you know, run it down. Because there you've got stuff like Sonic, where Sonic is cute. You know, he's kind of a wisecracker. Dr. Eggman has robots. And besides that, there's really not much to, like, the story of that game that feels like Sonic to me. It's more just about, like, if you like those things about Sonic, you will enjoy watching the movie, and it doesn't do something so wild that you go, well, that's obviously not Sonic. So, like, I don't know. I think respecting the audience is something that is useful, but I do think that, like, you can't, I don't know. I guess you have to understand the thing is the way that the audience does, but then you have to kind of challenge.
So, like, them. In a way, a more perfect film would be, say, the 1993 Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, honestly, I think movie's okay. You know,
it's I think it's a great movie, because I honestly think it understands the very minimal core plot that is going on. Mm-hmm. It gives us reasons as to why this is happening, and for somebody like me, who was a young tyke, able to view the film almost by themselves, it also introduced me to, like, a darker, weirder, I dare say, David Lynchian kind of, like, a way of looking at something that I never would have thought existed in that area, and yet it was cohesive enough that I was like, oh, man, movies can do something really cool. Video games are really cool. What if you put them together forever? And here I am. So
I think we all agree that video game movies have gotten good.
Yeah. Well, so yeah. On that note, thanks, math. if you look at, and again, this is just because we have 8 minutes left, and I'm not saying that the rankings I am about to say have any actual weight on whether you should enjoy a film or not, but I will be referencing the Rotten Tomatoes.
By the way, Matt, you're welcome for teaching you Excel.
Oh, you know, I love it. You can, did you know, have you guys heard of Excel? This is crazy. So the industry total average thing on Rotten Tomatoes for the video game movies in the categories we are talking about is roughly 27%. But you go the last 10 years, and it's 44%. You go the last 5 years, it's 54%. So at least from critics on that aggregated site, or that site aggregates from, they are getting received much better, right? And I think that actually speaks to a little bit of, I can't remember who said it. Someone else said it down here, but like we are all as a culture, whether we are hanging out at PAX and nerding out about video game movies for an hour, or just living our lives and not in these, talking about these topics, video games are more prolific than ever. Mm-hmm. More people care about video games than ever. And the institutional knowledge of video games is greater than ever. Therefore, I think that, especially as we move down the line, more filmmakers grew up with video games than ever before. So the language is a little bit more understood. You might have more people in places of power that can fight back against, like, well, no, because this isn't what that's supposed to be, etc.
There's some really good stats on that. Actually, the average age of the gamer hasn't been below 30 since 2008. And it's been slowly rising about a year per year as we're going on.
Yeah.
Not quite. And we're hitting, at this point, three generational video game households of people who are basically grandparents.
Xbox.
Or, you know, basically 50-year-olds with, you know, 25-year-old kids who have now their own kids who are like four or five and, you know, all three generations playing together. And so we're getting to the point where video games are a ubiquitous form of entertainment that has been going on long enough that it's become part of the cultural vernacular and people to speak to it, and they have that knowledge in there. Like I was joking with Matt, Batman, that, you know, we could have called, based on some early definitions, Shaun of the Dead a video game movie, because it bookends with Shaun and his buddy playing video games at the beginning and video games at the very end. And years ago, that might have been considered a game movie, but now it's just a nice bookend of something that people do together and have fun.
Well, it's just amazing that there are so many
movies. Fight it, Matt. Fight the urge, Matt.
That there are so many movies now that can be referenced as video game movies, that it is an emerging genre that we can all associate with and have this conversation, because we couldn't have done that, like, what, 10, 15 years ago? You know, they're just... I mean, it was so, like, unknown still, you know?
And it's not like these things are stopping. I mean, we've probably, if you're at this panel, you've seen the trailer for Borderlands.
Yeah.
I love that reaction, by the way. I want to bottle that. And then bring it to them and be like, do you see?
Meh.
But the, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We got we got Sonic 3, Death Stranding, like you said. There's a Minecraft movie.
We don't know what that is.
We don't even know what that's going to be.
I heard it's about boxing.
It's like every day with this guy.
I think I do want to, as we sort of end up wrapping up, I do want to say something that I know I poo-pooed on Mortal Kombat Annihilation. And I will continue to do so. But Mortal Kombat Annihilation taught me, as a younger person, something very important that has actually, wow, I didn't even realize this, has actually affected my career and wanting to get into media. Mortal Kombat Annihilation was the first time I realized as a child that a movie could be bad. Before watching that movie, I didn't even sort of, I knew people made movies, but I didn't internalize, like, how a movie, like, I didn't understand it then, but I was like, oh, wait, so you can do this wrong. Like, there's a thing, and, like, that got me curious about wanting to work in media and make film and then eventually go into TV and now into the YouTube space. Like, it's weird, but thank you, Mortal Kombat Annihilation, for that. I don't know. That's it, I don't know. I want to turn a frown upside down in that little way. I think, sorry, that was a tangent.
Tangent number five.
Thank you.
Oh, I think you lost at least half of them. We're at least on 10.
But the point is, I do think, oh, actually, let's end it with that, asking them. By a round of applause, and we'll vote on loudness, do we think that video game movies have gotten good? I'll pretend that was for us. And then the second thing, on the count of three, I want you all to yell why you think video game movies got good. Ready? 3, 2, 1.
Budget.
Uwe Boll stopped making them. That was God, the main problem. There was this guy who was polluting the industry for 8 years, and everyone hated them.
I think we've nailed it. Everybody, thank you so much for spending your Friday with us. Just go down the line. Everyone, say where they can find you and stuff.
On the thing on the screen, but more important, keep going and seeing films.
Yes.
Keep reading about films and video games. Understand, nurture your interests and appetites. Grow, learn, be beautiful. That's how you do it.
Up there. I guess it's all on the screen. I'm sorry. Yeah. Kat made this gorgeous thing, and I didn't even know.
We do want to point out there's a QR code that's scannable.
If you enjoyed this, make sure to go ahead and use the QR code up there and tell PAX.
You know, PAX, it's young. We don't know if it's going to stick around. Help make it
20 years young.
Yeah, just like Entourage.
Also,
wait. Does that mean next year we get alcohol at PAX?
Yeah.
What?
It'll be 21.
PAX gets alcohol.
You have to wait a year, buddy.
PAX gets alcohol.
Seriously, thank you all for coming and spending your Friday with us. Please come up here. We have a couple giveaways. If you want to come chat, and we'll be here
thank
for
the enforcers. Minute.
Thank you for the thank enforcers. Staff. Thank you for tech.
Because they are necessary.
And thank you for watching movies.
And have a great rest of PAX. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much.